All right, well, thanks, Laura, for organizing this session. Thanks all you for coming. I'm Nick Reich, and here to talk today a little bit about estimating case fatality ratios and some of the challenges that we have trying to estimate case fatality ratios, sort of especially early on in infectious disease outbreaks. I think I was supposed to put up a slide saying I have no financial relationships about this. This is work that some people, important people to thank here. Ron Brookmeyer, who was my PhD thesis advisor when I was at Johns Hopkins, and he's now at UCLA. Also, Justin was one of the collaborators on this project, as well as Derek Cummings, and both of them are part of this infectious disease dynamics working group at Johns Hopkins. Most of the work that I'm going to be talking about here is work that has been published in a biometrics paper last year. So I want to start by sort of trying to motivate an understanding of sort of how people think about case fatality ratios, how case fatality ratios are estimated in real time in outbreak settings. So this is a graph that I generated from data that the WHO was publishing as the 2009 H1N1 outbreak was developing. Very early on, let me just put up a look at the very simple equation. There are going to be a few more equations than in Justin's talk, and this is going to be one of the simple ones. We're going to blow through most of them, though. So we have a case fatality ratio, which in general is sort of like a conditional probability. What's the probability that you die given that you become infected with a certain pathogen? So what we did here was we collected reported case data from the WHO, and that was the total number, the sort of cumulative count was our denominator, and the total number of observed deaths, that was the numerator here. And we looked at how that changed across time based on all these sort of situation updates that the WHO is putting out. And you can see there's this sort of worrisome spike where about 10% of all the cases that have been reported had died. But this fairly quickly, over the course of less than a month, sort of settled down to something that was close rather than one out of every 10 reported cases, it was one out of every 100 cases. This would still be a very worrisome case fatality ratio for influenza. I think the 1918 pandemic was maybe about that or a tiny bit higher, but we didn't totally believe this, and of course we know that this very much ended up not being the case. 2009 was not a severe flu. This graph ultimately not terribly helpful for helping us get at what the actual case fatality ratio was. A similar graph for 2013, this is one I pulled off some website. The black line is the case fatality ratio curve, again, sort of measured over time. Similar pattern, it sort of spikes early on when most of the cases that are being reported are severe cases. Awareness of the outbreak picks up, more cases are reported, possibly different policies are put in place to mandate reporting in certain settings, so more cases, more actual cases that don't die start being reported, and this settles down. But this settles down even to 20%, so this is, again, sort of unrealistically high number by several orders of magnitude. So another graph, this is actually just a week old, came out in a paper in Epidemiology last week. This is from a systematic review of case fatality ratio estimates from the 2009 H1N1 pandemic. And you can see each one of these blue dots is a paper that had an estimate of the case fatality ratio. This is based on the denominator of the case fatality ratio being laboratory confirmed cases. They're measuring it a little differently, but this is essentially from 1 in 10 is the 10,000 to like 1 in 1,000 over here. So these are still sort of quite a bit higher than we think the actual case fatality ratio is. This is a whole lot of papers that are publishing estimates for this case fatality ratio that are, fairly high. So the question is, there's a challenge out here that is, how can we, is there anything we can do early on to come up with a decent estimate of case fatality ratios? So we're going to present one way to sort of get some traction on this problem. So some of the challenges that the sort of statistical challenges that we face when sort of approaching this problem are that
that not all cases and deaths are going to be reported, and they're probably going to be reported differentially, and they may, the rates at which they're reported are probably going to be changing over time. So that's that second piece, is that these reporting rates are going to be changing over time. And finally, in a sort of real-time setting, you may be undercounting fatal cases because they may not yet have died. So you may be counting somebody, you know, and this is, again, in a scenario where you may have somebody get sick and then they survive for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 months, and then they die from complications. We may not be initially counting them as a fatal case. And this, so again, if you're trying to make real-time estimates, this could be a factor that you need to take into account. So So the motivating question here is, under what conditions, what are the conditions that we need to be able to estimate a case fatality ratio or a relative case fatality ratio with some sense of accuracy? So we're defining the case fatality ratio as we did before, a total number of deaths divided by a total number of cases. The relative case fatality ratio we can think of as a ratio between a case fatality ratio in one group divided by a case fatality ratio in another group. You might think of this as comparing two age groups, or pregnant women to not pregnant women, or men to women, or something like this. And I'm going to say that this in this talk here, we're going to look at methods for trying to estimate this relative case fatality ratio. There are some methods that people have been working on recently that seem fairly promising for estimating an actual case fatality ratio, that use sort of a pyramid probability scheme where you estimate probability of hospitalization given that you become sick, a probability of death given hospitalization. And these seem to be sort of a decent way to get traction on estimating the case fatality ratio itself. And our work here is going to focus on trying to estimate relative case fatality ratios. So this first, I'm going to sort of use a very toy example to illustrate, again, sort of drive home this point of why estimating case fatality, we're going to use a simple example to illustrate why even estimating relative case fatality ratios can be problematic in this scenario of just using the sort of simple surveillance data. So here's the scenario. We have an outbreak that's going to be taking place over the course of these 60 time units. And let's assume for the moment that that all deaths that occur in this outbreak are reported. It's completely reported in that. So we have this sort of line of our reporting rate is just staying at 1 throughout the whole time. And then we're going to say, all right, the reporting rate for cases is going to have one fixed value for the first half of the epidemic and then a second fixed value for the second half. Again, we're trying to just create sort of a simple toy scenario. This is not, it's not probably super, super realistic, but it's also may not be far from the truth, given that, often partway through an outbreak, there's, the CDC might say we're mandating reporting of certain cases, and you might actually see a fairly substantial bump. So for the purposes of this, we have sort of an early case reporting rate, which we're going to call FEA. We're going to come back to a little bit of this notation in a little bit. So we say FEA, this is the sort of early reporting rate, and FEB, this is this late reporting rate. All right, so here is an outbreak curve that we're superimposing on this, conveniently occurring right when that shift in reporting rate is happening. And then, in addition, we're going to say that there are sort of two subpopulations in this population that's experiencing the outbreak. We have group one, which has a case fatality ratio of 3 out of every 1,000, and group two, which has an absolute case fatality rate of 1 in every 1,000. So our question here is a naive estimate of the relative case fatality ratio bias. So the target here, let's say, is P2 over P1, or 1/3. And here's what some simulations tell us. Okay, look, we're going to unpack this graph for a second. So we have every pixel on this graph represents a different possible sort of step function of reporting rates. Remember, we had the early reporting rate and the late reporting rate. So and the early reporting rates are indexed here on the x-axis. The late reporting rates are indexed on the y-axis. And what this is saying, so if we pick a point like right up here, it's at about 0.7 and 0.7, that reporting rate function would essentially be a flat line at 0.7. Your early reporting rate would be 0.7, your late reporting rate would be 0.7. If we pick a point down here, we'd have an early reporting rate of, say, 0.9 and a late reporting rate of 0.1, so that step function would start up here and then drop down here. It's not a terribly realistic scenario, but we're just trying to sort of sweep the whole space of possible scenarios, and you can see the different colors of each of these pixels are indicating what the estimate of that relative case fatality ratio is. So when these reporting rates are fairly similar, that is, when it's essentially a flat line of reporting, we're getting we have a decent estimate of this relative case fatality ratio. The white pixels are sort of around one-third. When we have red, when the pixels are red, it's indicating an underestimate of the relative case fatality ratio, and when they're blue, it's an overestimate. And in fact, you can see this darkest blue set here, these are scenarios where we completely flip the estimate of the relative case fatality ratio, and we don't even, you know, it's not even in the right direction. We're saying group two is at more risk than group one, and that's just completely, completely wrong. So so it's fairly dangerous to use this. I think this is a simple example that shows that it's dangerous to use this just as a naive estimator. And we'll come back to this graph in a little bit. So the methods that we propose to sort of help correct this problem are to define a data structure that implicitly incorporates reporting rates, and then we can classify different types of assumptions that can be made about reporting rates, because we need to be really careful about, in order to get some traction on this problem, we need to make assumptions about how reporting rates are changing in different groups and how they're the same in some groups, and we'll explain this in a little bit. And then we use this to come up with a fairly simple estimator for this relative case fatality rate, which adjusts for time-varying reporting. And then we also adapt it to adjust for this disease-delayed mortality that I was explaining before about sort of in real time people becoming sick but not yet dying. Okay, so a little more notation. This is essentially, we've tried to reduce this to a 2x2 table where every case is classified in one of these four bins as either being, so we're stratifying by being reported or not reported, by being recovered and dying. And the case counts that we see or say that are being reported in the WHO data is just this top row. So we're seeing a set of cases that are recovered and reported, a set of cases that are reported and to have died, and then a total. So that's C, D, and N. With these subscripts T for time and J for some group. Again, it might be an age group or gender or something like this. So we've already used this sort of P to indicate this the case fatality ratio in a group J. So we're saying PJ is this case fatality ratio in some group. We have this other notation psi T, which is the probability that a death is reported at time T. So the important things here are that in this particular scenario, and I'm just showing one subset of this framework that we've laid out, but we're assuming that that the case fatality ratio does not change over time, and we're also assuming that that the reporting rates do not change across groups. So these are some fairly stringent assumptions, and we've done some sensitivity analysis to sort of see how sensitive all this is, but these are sort of the key assumptions here, is that the case fatality ratio is not changing over time, and the these reporting probabilities aren't changing by group. So if we make that assumption, we can use this 2x2 table to write down a sort of Poisson model, where we say we model the number of cases here, or sorry, the number of deaths that we see conditional on the total number of cases as a as a Poisson model, where we take the total number of cases, which we don't observe, but bear with me for a minute on that, and we multiply it by the cell probability, which is the probability of dying multiplied by the probability of being reported. But again, we don't observe this this n star. This is the total number of cases, so we need to do a little fix for this. And we observe that when these p are small, we can approximate n star with n over over phi. So if we plug that in here, then we all of a sudden start to see something that we can have get a little bit of traction on. So we can rearrange things. So notice we have this n star has been replaced by n over phi. So we have this phi and this psi that are just dependent on t, so we can put them together. And then we have something that's ntj, this is a total number of cases that we observe, a pj that's just dependent on your group, and then this ratio of probabilities, which is just dependent on time. So we can reformulate this, now that we've written it like this, into a fairly standard generalized linear model, where we have we're modeling, again, the d's are our outcome. We have an offset that's the total number of cases. We have factors that are indexed for time and factors that are indexed for group. And what this allows us to do is if we fit this model, and again, this can be fit with any, you know, it's not a fancy statistical model. It can be fit with a, you know, any standard software package. The exponentiated parameter here, gamma j, is an estimate of the relative case fatality ratio for group j versus group 1. So again, back to our toy. Well, there's some crazy results here that show that actually, this should sweep away the bias in theory. And in practice, we come back to our simple example, and we ask, how does this naive estimator compare to the adjusted estimator? We see that that it does. So basically, here, this isn't just a blank graph. This is a graph that is showing that all of the bias, all these pixels that were different colors, have been, when we use this adjusted model, it sweeps away all of the bias. Again, assuming these assumptions hold about the reporting rates and probabilities and how they're varying. So this is a nice result. It shows that when we use this model to sort of account for time-varying reporting, we can eliminate quite a bit of the bias that we see in the naive estimate. I think I'm going to skip over some of the details of sort of how we've implemented this, the challenges posed by disease-delayed mortality, but I mentioned that this is an issue. We extended this model to sort of account for this, and it has sort of similar things. So we basically, well, I'm just going to skip over these, this nice little graphic thing. So we took some data, from the 1918 influenza epidemic. This is data that are for different counties in Maryland. So the counties are here, and we have cases and deaths for four different months at the beginning of the pandemic in 1918. And this is the type of data that we need to be able to fit to sort of use this method. So an interesting piece here, and I think sort of one of the an interesting piece in all this is that we had a hard time finding data that was sort of in the format that we needed, in the sense that we needed sort of over time these cases and deaths stratified by some grouping variable that that we wanted to compare against. And most often when surveillance data is reported, we see we don't have things sorted by we don't have things sort of stratified by a covariate that would be interesting, like gender or age groups or something like this. And so we think that this is actually one of the one of the interesting sort of proposals that would come out of this work is to think about what covariates might be interesting to look at here, like age groups, and to suggest that some of the surveillance data have some of the stratification. So we fit this model, we see some, you know, we basically were able to implement this model with real data. That's what this slide is showing. So the contributions here are that we've identified some conditions where we can estimate this case fatality ratio and the relative case fatality ratio. We've made these tools available in the course data tools package for R, but it can also be fit just with any software using fairly standard regression models. I'm going to skip this slide. Well, I'll just say very quickly that this is another figure from that review paper I was talking about. You'll notice this is using, these red points are more estimates for the case fatality ratio. All those blue points, remember, were over here. This is sort of using models to estimate infections. And you can see that when they do this to estimate the denominator for the case fatality ratio, their estimates are quite a bit lower, which is probably a little more close to the truth. But they're also sort of relying on models. It might be a little harder to derive these estimates in real time. So we still think that that's sort of one of the strengths of the work that we're proposing here. All right, I'll stop there. Thanks.